every Monday and Friday at 2:25 here on the Big Show on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Eric, it is raining. It is gross. It is just no fun here. So make us feel better with what it's like in your
neck
of the
woods. Beach, won't
Come
you?
On, let us live vicariously.
Do you want to hear how nice it is, or do you want me to also commiserate and say, look, you know, the June gloom is set in early, and you know.
No, I want to live vicariously through you.
Okay, it's a beautiful day. Now, the only bad thing is I haven't had a chance to get out in it. But once I finish talking to you guys, I think I have the rest of the day free, and I think I'm planning to go out and maybe go for a run on the beach or play some tennis. Later on, have a drink at, in a happy hour or somewhere in a nice spot on the ocean. Yeah, so I think that's what I'm going to do.
When you're down there, where are you, Eric? Like, are
I'm
you
in Long Beach.
You're on
Long
Beach.
Oh, man.
Yeah, so it's about 45 minutes from Staples. It's about 30 minutes from the pond. It's a block and a half from the beach, but, you know, as anybody knows, the beach communities here, you know, north and south both are better than Long Beach. It's a port city. I mean, the Queen Mary is docked about 10 minutes from here. That when the Long Beach Grand Prix comes to this town every year, you can hear the cars. They're that close. It's a pretty big city in and of itself, but it is not a sleepy resort town. You know, if you go further down, you get to Seal Beach and Huntington Beach. Those are great. And further north, it's Malibu and Manhattan Beach and all of the places that Peter Marr likes to talk about when he's down in California.
It sounds like the hockey mecca, Eric.
Well, you know, it's funny you should mention that because I don't know if you picked up your latest Sports Illustrated, but an old friend of mine, Austin Murphy, was hanging around for about a week. And, we were talking a little bit, and he was asking me a bunch of questions about hockey in California because at that time the Ducks were still alive, and it looked like there was a real chance that three of the final four teams in the Western Conference could be the California teams. And you could argue that, you know, the California's developing players, like Emerson Adams, had a real good playoff for the Ducks. And although Bo Bennett isn't playing a ton for the Pittsburgh Penguins, I think any time you see him, you'll think to yourself, well, there's a guy that looks like he's going to score in the National Hockey League. And these are homegrown guys who have come through the ranks in Southern California. So there is more of a community than you think here. And you always see it when you're out at El Segundo, which is where the Kings practice. They share a practice facility with the Los Angeles Lakers. And, you know, the youth hockey programs that go through there, I mean, you know, if you're there on the weekends, you can run into Pat Brisson, who's Crosby's agent. You can run into Rob Blake, Nelson Emerson, Matthew Schneider. All their kids are in the youth hockey programs there, and they're good players. They're good players, and some of these kids are going to play in the pros, and some of the, you know, the kids that have come through the ranks in the last 5 to 7 years are already in the pros.
Was that LA's best game of the postseason last night?
No question. That was my first thought, and I know it was the last question that was asked to Daryl Sutter, and his answer was yep. But what I thought was interesting was, and I was guilty of this too. You know, for a couple of days there, we were talking about was San Jose. Joe Thornton was really good. Logan Couture has been really good. Niemi has been real good, and rightly so. I mean, they won their two games there, and it just felt like the series had a little bit of a shift there. And I wondered, you know, what the Kings could come back with because, you know, Kopitar hadn't scored in a while, and they were changing their lines, and it just looked like an element of doubt had crept into the Kings' game. And then, wow, they responded in a big, meaningful way. I mean, it was a scoreless game into the 38th minute, but there's no doubt in my mind that LA was the better team. They came out with a real good game plan. I mean, the right side defense that they've got are terrific. You know, Doughty, Voinoff, Matt Green back from injury right now, and these guys played physical, two of them anyway, Doughty and Green, physical and aggressive, pinching down the boards, and were in the third and fourth games of the series were really San Jose had a ton of zone time and really had the puck on their string most of that time. It was the opposite yesterday. Yesterday, the Kings, because of their persistent forecheck, they didn't let the Sharks get out of the zone. They played a lot more of the game in the San Jose end of the rink, and it's just an easier game to play. And as good as Jonathan Quick was in the third period, and he was terrific in the final couple of minutes when they got the goalie out and Thornton made those great passes to Burns and Pavelski, he didn't really have a lot to do in the first two periods. So it's a real interesting series. I've enjoyed it. You know, you've heard me talk on and on about how we need more goal scoring in the league, and there's all kinds of, you know, I have all kinds of issues with the lack of offense. But I thought there were two games last night, this one and the Detroit-Chicago, that were low-scoring games that were still exciting and had all the best things that you see in hockey on display. So I don't mind, you know, low-scoring shutout games like those two, as long as there are chances and as long as there's, you know, back and forth in the games. And I thought both games were really fun to watch.
I agree with you totally, Eric. I mean, for low-scoring games, both of those examples were really fun to watch. Hey, listen, San Jose really, they played a pretty darn good hockey game last night as well, but it just shows you exactly what level the Kings are playing on. I thought San Jose looked good at times.
I thought they weren't bad either, and yet, when you talk to their people afterwards, Todd McClellan was not happy with their game, and certainly that was the message that you got from the players in the dressing room, too, Thornton and Couture especially, that we can be a lot better than this, and we didn't start on time, and we didn't like a lot of things about our game, and hey, the good news is that there's room for improvement. So they've set the bar pretty high for themselves, because I thought that it looked to me like, yeah, they were being outplayed, but, when you play that kind of rope-a-dope thing and you keep it scoreless on the road, especially in a building like L.A. where the Kings haven't lost in 13, that, you might get your break, and if you get your break and you get that first goal, it could be your game. So I was a bit surprised, actually, that their own self-assessment was that, we weren't very good and we need to be a lot better. But maybe that's a sign of how much higher the standard has been set internally in San Jose. I mean, my view is that this has been a classic homer series in a homer year. Like, it's funny how last year all we talked about was, why the road teams were so good and why it was so much easier to play on the road. And everybody had a theory about, there's too much pressure at home. And then this year it's been the complete opposite. The home teams are winning, two out of three. And certainly in this round they're winning, I think, four out of five. And it's very much been a homer kind of a series. And this one has been the classic. I mean, San Jose has not lost at home in these playoffs, and neither have the Kings.
What about the rivalry between these two teams? I mean, we know they know each other very well for how much they play in the regular season. How is that kind of playing through in the series in the postseason?
That's a really good question, because I thought one of the storylines I tried to advance at the start of the series was that, that Dean Lombardi, the general manager in Los Angeles, put a lot of the early pieces of the puzzle together in San Jose. I mean, he was the manager there when they drafted Hannon, Stewart, Marlowe. Darryl was the coach when these guys were young kids coming up. And that was really the foundation of the team that they have right now. When they had all those high draft choices and they managed to develop a lot of homegrown players, and a couple of them, Stewart and Hannon left and then came back. But the fact is, their fingerprints are all over the San Jose franchise. And yet, when you try to broach this subject with them, it's like, ancient history, doesn't matter, don't care. We just care about winning one game. They just wouldn't go along with it. So, okay, that's fine. But I do think that there is more to it than they would be prepared to let on. And I think because both of those guys have roots and ties to that area, when they go up there for away games, they know people in those cities. That's what happens when you live and work in a community for a long period of time. So I think there is a rivalry. I mean, they played each other a couple times in the playoffs the last couple of years, and I think both teams, they have a kind of a grudging respect for each other, because L.A., as we know, plays that lean on people, the heavy hitting, wear teams down kind of style. That's how they won the Stanley Cup last year. And I think that San Jose, when they moved Brent Burns up front, when they put Gagliardi on the top line with Thornton, they are playing more of that. For a big team, San Jose was a soft team for a long period of time. They are not as soft a team anymore, not nearly as soft as they once were. So I think that it has been a fairly bruising physical series, mostly played within the rules. I mean, there was a little bit of chirping yesterday, but it was just the kind of made-up stuff. Gagliardi talking about Quick being a diver, and then the Doughtys talked about how Gagliardi is the worst diver in the league. And it wasn't, it reminded me of the Kevin Bieksa stuff in the previous round between Vancouver and San Jose. Just somebody that decided that they wanted to chirp a little bit. But this is, it's hard fought, and that to me is what the essence of a rivalry. Is it hard fought? Yes, it is hard fought.
He is Eric DeHatchick, joining us from the Globe and Mail, globesports.com. Joins us every Monday and Friday on the Big Show here on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Eric, are the Hawks done?
Yeah, that's a good question. It feels like they are. Now, they are going back home, so, you would think that they should be able to win a home game in that building. I think the fans are going to be behind them. And then I think that essentially the series will come down to game six in Detroit. But the one thing that I am surprised, because I have never seen this happen, is how Jonathan Toews seems to have lost his composure and his poise. I mean, he is one of the most composed young men I have ever dealt with in my life. I mean, this is a guy that just has a real button-down nature, and it translates into the way he plays on the ice. And this is why coaches love him. This is why, you know, when Mike Babcock was talking about the series ahead of time, he was talking about Jonathan Toews and praising him up and down because, of course, he had him on the Olympic team, and he was a key guy on that Olympic team. So for Toews to have the kind of meltdown that he had yesterday, where he had the three penalties in the second period, and where really Brent Seabrook had to go into the penalty box and put his arm around him and say, calm down, buddy, calm down. That is out of character, and I think that is one of the reasons that the Blackhawks are behind. I think the frustration of not scoring is really getting to him, and Joel Quenneville can sit there at the podium all he wants and talk about all the other things that Toews does well, and he is right. He does win faceoffs, and he is good in the defensive zone, and he is a responsible player. But he scored 23 regular season goals for the Blackhawks, and why he is an MVP candidate because he brings all those things and the scoring dimension. And Chicago has scored two goals in the last three games. They need more scoring, and, you know, you have to turn to the Patrick Kanes and the Jonathan Toews and the Marian Hossas and the Patrick Sharps to get that. So let's see. I mean, I don't want to ever doubt Jonathan Toews because I think he's a terrific player, and, you know, eventually he's going to get it together here because, you know, players go through tough times and slumps like this, and he's not the only elite-level player that's having trouble putting the puck in the net in these playoffs. But if he's going to get it going, he has to get it going, like, right now.
Jimmy Howard has been in the NHL now for a number of years. He's got playoff rounds under his belt, but it really seems like now there's no question marks about him as being the guy with the Red Wings, and not only that, but just being a guy who's capable of playing the minutes they're asking him to play.
Yeah, but did you see Mike Babcock's press conference after? It was pretty funny because you could tell that all of the writers that were there, you know, a bunch of them anyway, had been assigned to Jimmy Howard is God stories. And Babcock, would not play along. He would not play along. Yeah, we pay him a lot of money to stop the pucks, and he's done a good job of that. And then Babcock went on to talk about how, you know, yes, you know, he's playing very well, no doubt about it, but, you know, we are helping him too, you know. And they described a play where, you know, he made the save on a two-on-one, and we had a guy there to clear the puck out of harm's way. And, you know, then there have been some goalposts in the series. So I don't know. There's something going on there between Babcock and Howard. I can't put my finger on what it is. But I think that Babcock feels that he has to deliver a dose of tough love to Jimmy Howard at all times. And so that's, you know, because I'm like you. I think that, you know, that the difference between Detroit now and the Detroit that we saw, say, in the first two-thirds of the season is that where Howard was inconsistent before, he is on a roll right now. Now, you know, his career has indicated that there have been times when he can be one of the best goaltenders in the league, and there have been times when he's been quite inconsistent. And I think that you join the ranks of the elite-level goaltenders when you wean that level of inconsistency down to just a handful of games here and there over the course of the season. So I know they were not happy with the goaltending that they were getting from him early on, and I think that contributed to the fact that they were, you know, a team that was sort of, you know, on the cusp of making or missing the playoffs. But he got it going around the same time that Zetterberg and Datsyuk have got it going, and he's kept it going. And, you know, while I don't think you can fault Corey Crawford for what's happened in this series, because I think Chicago's goaltending has been more than adequate as well, the fact is that the level of goaltending that Howard is giving them right now has been giving them a chance to win these low-scoring games, which is why they are where they are.
He's Eric DeHatchick of the Globe and Mail, globesports.com. Two more kind of away from the postseason. Number one, Patrick Waugh is officially the new head coach and VP of hockey operations with the Colorado Avalanche. That was made official yesterday. News conference coming up on Tuesday. It's funny, we were talking yesterday. I would love to see what the organizational flow chart looks like in Colorado right now, because you've got a general manager, but you've also got a VP of hockey operations and an executive VP of hockey operations. I can't remember a hockey ops department quite like this one. How do you see that?
Well, I think Sakic is the guy in charge, as near as I can tell. But, you know, what you have to read into this, and the reason why it took so long for the Patrick Waugh news to become official, was that Patrick Waugh obviously did not want to go just as the head coach. And there's very few people that are in a position where they can say, yeah, I want to be the head coach, but I also want an executive title so that I'm involved in all of those meetings when it comes time to deciding, you know, who gets traded, who gets signed, et cetera, et cetera. I don't want to just sort of be involved in a peripheral way. I want to have an absolute say in this matter. So, you know, if I'm imagining how it will function rather than worrying about what the titles are, I think Sakic is the guy in charge, that Greg Sherman is the general manager, but he will be the guy that does a lot of the detail work, you know. And, you know, I call it the heavy lifting because I think that you know, there's an awful lot involved in that job, including, you know, like the salary cap ramifications, the negotiations of contracts, the preliminary talks on trade things. Like, a lot of general managers will let their assistant general managers be the legman when it comes to making trades and make the initial overtures, and then they have the final say. So that's how I see it. There was a time when I think the San Jose Sharks, right at the start of their incarnation, they had what they called a three-headed monster, because there were three members in hockey operations that all reported to the president, and no one was sure whether it could work, you know, when you have that sort of, you know, top-down kind of management structure. And so we'll see how this one works. But I'm just, you know, sort of interested to see what Patrick Roy will be like as an NHL head coach, because mm-hmm. as we all know, it's a completely different animal. When you've got those kids playing for you in junior hockey, you have complete control over them, and they're making their $60 a week or whatever it is. And, you know, suddenly now Patrick Roy has a room full of millionaires. And, you know, when you have that kind of financial clout and you have the security of a long-term contract, and contracts are hard to move in the National Hockey League, you have to use persuasion rather than, you know, than intimidation sometimes in terms of getting your message across. And I'm not sure that Patrick is the most persuasive guy, but he is a, you know, like, he's a, you know, firebrand, and he's exciting, and, you know, like, he gets his blood up, and I think that's something that organization needs. I mean, you know, I think they've just been very, very bland for a long period of time. I look at their personnel. I think they should be better than they are. So, you know, if they have Seth Jones coming, they can sort out the goaltending and get it to be a bit more consistent, and you know, have these young kids that they've got mature. I mean, it could be great. I mean, it could be great. And the one thing about it is it'll be worth watching. So I'm happy that they went this route rather than going in a different route. I really want to see what Patrick Roy is going to be like as an NHL coach.
And finally, Bodog.ca has Lindy Ruff, the best odds to become the new head coach of the Vancouver Canucks. Do you have any line, or from who you've talked to, as to who might be good possible candidates there?
See, I don't see that as a fit, you know, and only because, you know, I'm going to believe that when Mike Gillis was at that, you know, giving his press conference the other day, and he said he wanted, like, a young, forward-thinking, fresh face, you know, that kind of thing, that basically meant that Lindy Ruff probably wasn't going to be a candidate. So, you know, I would say that since John Cooper has already been scooped up by Tampa, you have to be talking about Dallas Eakins. Now, you know, do you have to get permission? I think Eakins probably has a window to leave the Toronto Marlboros. But, you know, the fact that, you know, that the prime candidate seems to be somebody that works in the Toronto organization, and Vancouver and Toronto have a long history of, a long recent history of not getting along very well, could be very interesting. So, you know, I'll throw his name out there, and I'm not sure that Scott Arneil is necessarily a candidate, but I'm sure he'll get a chance to at least apply for the position. But it sounds to me like he wants a guy that he believes is going to be the next great young coach. And if that's the case, you know, it sounds to me like Eakins would be, you know, the guy that probably has to be at the top of his list.
Eric, go enjoy yourself in California. We'll continue enjoying ourselves in the rain here.
All right. Talk to you on Monday, Memorial Day down here.